This is Over the Culture Podcast, where you get to hear my spin on things I like music, sports, sports entertainment, movies, TV shows, and your mom. You also get to hear about things I don't like stank hoes. And I'm your bastard of ceremonies, the one gear kid, Pat Stay Black, Alex Treblank, Reefer Sutherland, Loot Fly Talker, the most interesting blurred in podcasting, the troller of trolls, the prince of petty, Steve G. It's September 18, 2022, and just yesterday, your boy celebrated his 39th birthday, and it was a day of peace, it was a day of chill, it was a day of drinking, smoking, football, and podcasting, not in that particular order. I recorded for my upcoming episode for Happened in the 90s with my buddy Matt G, and that's just how I decided to use my day. I always tell people, even if I don't have plans for my birthday, I just know one thing I'm not going to be doing, and I plan to not be at my place of employment. And Saturday I wasn't at either place of employment, and even Saturday going into Sunday I wasn't going to be at my overnight job. I had enough time to use at my Amazon gig, and speaking of my Amazon gig, this funky hoe over the week, this funky ass bitch, she was being a funky bitch, and you know, I'm coming back from lunch, we're both coming back from lunch, right in front of the clock, waiting to clock in, and you know, I just decided to strike up a conversation. I saw she was wearing a Wu-Tang shirt, and I told her, hey, did you know Wu-Tang's coming to town next week on the 22nd, Thursday? Tickets are only $25, you know, and she's just kind of acting all like, oh, really? That's what's up, like looking into her phone, and after that shit, the bitch just walks away. She waddles her fat fucking ankles further down the floor away from me as if I creeped her out. Well, pardon me for just trying to have small talk, you big fat bitch. I guess you're too big for small talk. And I pisses me off on so many levels, because not only did I feel like that was rude, very disrespectful, bitch, you can't hold a conversation, what the fuck did I do to you? But also the fact that she did that while wearing a Wu-Tang shirt, and I feel like that does not exemplify the spirit of a fan of the Wu-Tang Clan. And I know, because I am a lifelong fan, and I will be at that concert on the 22nd, this Thursday, to see Wu-Tang Clan, Nas, another fellow Virgo, and also guest Busta Rhymes. Yes, and I'm looking forward to that. And that's a part of my birthday celebration as we're nearing the end of Virgo season. By the way, I'm very thankful for you, Virgo season. I needed you. This was a moment, a time period of self-actualization. I was letting society tell me who the fuck I was when that wasn't the case. Don't tell me who the fuck I am when I'm not that. Fuck you, society. I'm Steve G, goddammit. And that's what helped me, this Virgo season, it reminded me of that. Man, fuck these people. Fat Wu-Tang Clan shirt wearing girl, you probably got it at fucking the bottom of a barrel at fucking Walmart. Didn't even look like the official W, ho. But anyways, big ticket item this past week, PNB Rock was murdered outside of Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in Los Angeles. And I went to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles years ago, actually close to a decade ago, with my buddies out there in LA. But luckily for us, we went out to the other one on a better side of the tracks. The one PNB Rock was murdered at was on Manchester, which is the not so great area of Los Angeles. And also, none of my buddies or myself were wearing jewelry. And that's what happened. They tried to rob him. They did rob him of his jewelry. He shot him and killed him. And it's unfortunate. The brother was not even from LA. He's originally from Philadelphia. And he moved out there to pursue his music career. And his girl was with him. And the thing that sucks even more about that, people, fucking laptop judges, they're accusing his girlfriend. They accuse his girl for the murder because they say she's responsible because she shared the location when they went to Roscoe's. Now imagine losing the love of your life or someone you're dating, someone that you potentially could be the love of your life. They're murdered in front of you, and now people are who are just strangers, complete strangers, blaming you for the murder of the person you're dating, someone you love. I swear, the internets really don't have any fucking love. These internet streets have no love for nobody. They don't love nobody in these internet streets. I mean, it could be the fact that he was wearing jewelry in a not so great area of Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is no fucking joke. I don't even know. I've been told that they don't really abide by those colors as tight as they used to back in the day. But still, I like to wear earth tones when I go out to LA. Earth tones or black and white. You can't go wrong. But he was at the Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles on Manchester, wearing jewelry. People knew his location. He had the drop on him, and the man is no longer with us. R.I.P. R.I.P. to him. And we had the Emmys, I believe, last Sunday. And two of the things that stood out, Shirley Ralph, she received an Emmy, her first Emmy, for Best Supporting Actress in a Situational Comedy. And I remember Shirley Ralph from Moesha. She played Dee, the stepmom, to me the greatest stepmom in sitcom history. So she did that for years. I remember her being in Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy in the early 90s. And I remember a not so familiar show she was in called New Attitude. It starred her, Yvonne Stickney, and Morris Day was even in the show. And it was called New Attitude. I believe it only lasted 8 episodes. And it's just, it's wild when you think about the progress. I wouldn't even say slow progress, because Shirley Ralph, she shared time between on screen and stage. But Shirley Ralph has been in the business for years, for decades. New Attitude came out, I was like in my early grade school years. This was like 89, 90. And she was doing all of these little shows, the Moeshas, Distinguished Gentlemen, and all the all-black cast, black productions. And she finally gets her shine. That was her moment for Abbott Elementary. And I've heard nothing but great things about Abbott Elementary. And also, shout out to Jason Sudeikis, who won his award, won an Emmy. I feel like, even with that Emmy, the man still is underrated as a comedic actor. And by the way, Jason Sudeikis, it's his birthday today, September 18th. Another Virgo. But Keenan was the host of the Emmys. And Kel Mitchell, his buddy Kel Mitchell, from all that, from Keenan and Kel, from Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. May I take your order? He made an appearance at the Emmys. And it was just great seeing them on screen together again. Homies from childhood. To us 80s babies, 90s kids, they were like our Laurel and Hardy. They were that comedic duo. They were like the young black Spade and Farley. And they had a falling out in their later years, but I like to think that they're back on good terms. And you know, that was just good to see. And hopefully, maybe, there'll be some collabs later down the line. Now, on Friday, ESTG releases his latest album, I Never Felt None. And, man, ESTG, I've talked about him a little bit here and there on the show. And he is signed to Yo Gotti's collective music group, CMG. ESTG, after listening to this album, which I've added just about every song on my playlist, ESTG has become one of my new favorite rappers. And, you know, I got my rappers in different brackets, in different genres. I split them from the boom bap hip hop guys, the Black Thoughts, the Commons, and all of that. And then I got my trap guys. I got my 21 Savage, my Jeezys, my Gucci's. And then I got my drill guys. And ESTG, he seems to be of the drill nature. Yes, I'm not too big on drill, but god damn it, that ESTG, he be coming with that heat, man. And if you like that turned up tempo, that fucking, to me, that's workout music. This is some shit I listen to working out, get you in that zone. This is that fucking introduction of that Meek Mill's album. Gives you that kind of feel, and I felt that on every fucking track of Never Felt None. I never felt none, but I do feel this fucking album. Check out ESTG. And also, King Crooked and Joell Ortiz releases their latest collab, Harbor City, Season 1. And god damn it, I swear, everybody from that slaughterhouse, even Joe Budden, even that toxic Virgo Joe Budden, King Crooked and Joell Ortiz, oh my god, just wordsmith. And I mean, of course, Royce the 5'9 from Slaughterhouse, wordsmith. Every fucking track on Harbor City Season 1, they're coming with that fucking fire. On fuego. If you were ever a fan of anything Slaughterhouse related, any of its associates, from Joe Budden to Royce the 5'9, King Crooked, Joell Ortiz, check out Harbor City Season 1. And my Buckeyes, they won a game against the Toledo Rockets. You know, nice try. Nice try, Toledo. I almost thought about breaking a sweat. I almost thought about it in the first quarter, but there was nothing to be worried about. Them guys, those Buckeyes, yeah, they did what they were supposed to do. But I will say, that quarterback for the Toledo Rockets, yeah, he's got a bright future. I mean, he was Toledo's offense, pretty much. I mean, he was like a young Michael Vick without the dogs. But yeah, man, Dak, he's going to be out for a while. And my Cowboys, it's just it's a toss-up. I don't want to talk about it. But all things September 18th. In 1932, actress Peg Entwistle commits suicide by jumping from the letter H on the Hollywood sign. In 1951, A Streetcar Named Desire, directed by Elia Kazan and based on Tennessee Williams' 1947 play of the same name, starring Marlon Brando and Vivien Leigh, is released. In 1964, the TV series The Addams Family, starring John Astin, Carolyn Jones, Ted Cassidy, and Jackie Coogan, premieres on ABC. In 1965, the TV comedy Get Smart, created by Mel Brooks and starring Don Adams, premieres. Also in 65, the TV sitcom I Dream of Jeannie, starring Barbara Eden as a 2,000-year-old genie and Larry Hagman as an astronaut who becomes her master, premieres on NBC. In 1983, the members of KISS show their faces without their makeup for the first time on MTV, simultaneous with the release of their album Lick It Up. In 1984, the series finale of Three's Company airs on ABC, following a three-episode story arc that also sets up the spinoff, Three's a Crowd. In 1985, Top 10 Things That Almost Rhyme with Peas is the subject of the first Top 10 list on NBC's Late Night with David Letterman. In 1987, Fatal Attraction and Hellraiser premiered in theaters, and on that same day, DuckTales finally begins airing in the U.S. for the first time ever in syndication. You know, I'm not big on those Disney characters like that, but I always fuck with those ducks. In 1989, Janet Jackson releases her album, Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation, 1814. In 1991, Mississippi Masala, starring Denzel Washington, premiered in theaters. And also on that same day, The Royal Family, starring Della Reese and Red Fox, debuts on CBS. In 1992, the films Captain Ron, Singles, and South Central premiered in theaters. And also in 92, The Golden Palace, The Golden Girls spinoff, debuts on CBS. In 1993, Biker Mice from Mars and Martha Stewart Living air for the first time in syndication, as well as Sonic the Hedgehog on ABC. In 1994, WCW airs the pay-per-view Fall Brawl 94. In 1998, Rush Hour premiered in theaters. In 2000, Madonna releases the album Music. In 2001, A$AP Rock releases Labor Days. In 2005, the 57th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards are given at the Shrine Auditorium in a ceremony broadcast by CBS. Lost, Everybody Loves Raymond, James Spader, and Patricia Arquette are some of the winners. Also in 2005, WWE airs the pay-per-view Unforgiven 2005. In 2006, the CW network debuts as the sixth broadcast network, merging with UPN and the WB. In 2009, Guiding Light, a CBS soap opera that began on radio in 1937 before moving to television in 1952, airs its final episode on the network, and that was one of those soap operas my grandma used to watch. Yeah. In 2011, the 63rd Emmy Awards are presented. Mad Men, Modern Family, Kyle Chandler, and Juliana Margulies are some of the winners. And also in 2011, WWE airs the pay-per-view Night of Champions 11. In 2012, Good Music releases Cruel Summer, and Creation releases Something About Cray. In 2014, Emma Watson delivers an address to standing ovation at UN headquarters in New York City, helping launch the UN Women campaign, He for She, which calls for men to advocate for gender equality. In 2015, Black Mass, which is, in my opinion, the last good Johnny Depp movie, premiered in theaters. And also in that same day, Mac Miller releases Good AM. In 2016, the 68th Primetime Emmy Awards air on ABC, with Jimmy Kimmel as host. The ceremony includes five awards, including Outstanding Limited Series for The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, repeat wins for Game of Thrones, and Veep as Outstanding Drama and Comedy Series, respectively. The first-time wins for actors Rami Malek and Tatiana Maslany. But more important to me than all that, the same day Biker Mice from Mars was airing in syndication, the same day Martha Stewart Living aired in syndication for the first time, Sonic the Hedgehog was debuting on ABC, Rocko's Modern Life debuted on Nickelodeon in 1993. And I remember watching this faithfully as a kid, especially when it first came out. And at this point, it has a cult following. And I watched it, like I said, as a kid, and I appreciated the humor that was targeted towards kids. But even as an adult, when I watch them on streaming on Paramount Plus or even on Netflix, it has some adult innuendo that I can actually catch. And to me, those kind of cartoons are timeless. Looney Tunes, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Simpsons, Family Guy, South Park. Oh, South Park's more in your face, but you get the picture. Today in sports history. In 1990, Atlanta is chosen to host the 1996 Summer Olympics. In 1991, American League Baseball executive John Hart becomes general manager of the Cleveland Indians. The NCAA places Tennessee on 2 years probation for football recruiting violations, and Robert Helmick resigns as president of U.S. Olympic Committee. In 1993, the LA Mighty Ducks play their first NHL preseason game against the Penguins. In 1994, Ken Burns' documentary miniseries Baseball premieres on PBS. In 1996, Roger Clemens ties his own major league record with 20 strikeouts. Asterix. And that was my half-assed sports history. Coming up, I'm going to talk about the show Rocko's Modern Life as it premiered on this day in 1993. We'll be back after these messages.
Million thoughts fall like paint onto a blank canvas to symbolize but not alleviate the pain's damage. ain't a bandage that can heal this abscess. I'm sick with this shit until I take my last breath. Repent, testify while I'm calling God's bluff. Put my hands in the sky, felt like I lost my touch. Bled from the first blood, prepared for the sequel. It's evil, how I love and hate the same people. Cheaping on the finest green, drowning the libations. Out of control like an inferno at the fire station. 40 car pile up on the boulevard of broken dreams. Throw it sound like music, you can hear it in the jokes and screams. Spoken like a battle cry that don't apply. Irony aside, sometimes you die when you ride. So why embellish the inevitable sorrow? Shake a bar or live today like there ain't no tomorrow. Make you deaf, sound like you're blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 It's like I make you deaf. Sound like you're blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 Sometimes I lose my mind.
Tango one chain, untamed, unleash. Elbows to the dome like metal world peace. Rabbit hybrid, hide your wife, hide your kids. MTV Cribs couldn't show you how I live. It's that microphone testing. First class X-Men. Several references of professional wrestling. Socially awkward, never been to Oxford. Used to live in a small town just south of Rossford. Live long and prosper, rock wood I rock with. Rock Wallace and administrating the mosh pits. Childhood friends are turning into Casper. My mind's expanding, I need more answers. Praying for Momia and a cure for cancer. Faith in the Lord, not these ministers or pastors. Miracles coming this way, I need them faster. I'm such an ungrateful bastard, creating disaster.
Trying to make you deaf, sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 Trying to make you deaf, sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 Sometimes I lose my mind.
In the earth, in the verse, then disperse it to the streets. Venom merchant burning beats, sweets blowing out my teeth. Verbiage urging you to reach, run away from the verbose. Pleasant voice, but of course leads you further up the coast and around again, and it feels like the future's here before. So I skip to my loop, having visions of support. A crumbling foundation ever since I've been annoyed. Got no choice, reaching for the buried treasure and my voice. Pipe down, pipeline, downtown is dirty. Sightline, riding foreign fleet, heaven sent 30 deep. Even if it's unsafe, it's suitable. It's therapy. Married to the money, need a chariot to carry me. I said I need a chariot to carry me. Further than time traveling, Twitter trending charity. Twitter trending charity. The cherubs out in Tel Aviv drop bombs. It's rhymes straight out of Lake Galilee.
Sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 It's like I make it deaf. Sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 It's like I make it deaf. Sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 It's like I make it deaf. Sound to leave you blind. It happens all the time. Sometimes I lose my mind. 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 Sometimes I lose my mind.
Special mention to those no longer with us. Last Monday, we lost American rapper, singer, and songwriter PNB Rock. Born Rakim Hashim Allen on December 9, 1991 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he was best known for his single Selfish in 2016, which peaked at number 51 on the US Billboard Hot 100, as well as his feature on the song Cross Me by Ed Sheeran alongside Chance the Rapper. He also provided uncredited vocals on XXXTentacion's hit single Changes, which reached the top 20 on the same chart. He released 2 studio albums, Catch These Vibes in 2017 and Trap Star Turned Pop Star in 2019, the latter of which peaked within the top 5 on the Billboard 200 chart. Allen was chosen as part of the 2017 XXL freshman class. On September 12, 2022, PNB Rock was robbed and fatally shot at Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles near Main Street and Manchester Avenue in Los Angeles, California. He was 30 years old. Also on Monday, we lost American jazz composer, pianist, and radio personality, Ramsey Lewis. Born Ramsey Emmanuel Lewis Jr. on May 27, 1935 in Chicago, Illinois, he recorded over 80 albums and received 5 gold records and 3 Grammy Awards in his career. His album, The In Crowd, earned Lewis critical praise and the 1965 Grammy Award for Best Jazz Performance. His best-known singles include The In Crowd, Sun Goddess, and Wade in the Water. Until 2009, he was the host of the Ramsey Lewis Morning Show on the Chicago radio station, WNUA. Lewis was also active in musical education in Chicago. He founded the Ramsey Lewis Foundation, established the Ravina's Jazz Mentor Program, and served on the Board of Trustees for the Merritt School of Music and the Chicago High School for the Arts. Lewis died in his sleep at his home in Chicago on September 12, 2022, at age 87. On Tuesday, we lost American R&B and soul singer, songwriter, Jesse Powell. Born on September 12, 1971 in Gary, Indiana, he was discovered by Louis Silas Jr., and Powell was best known for his hit, You, which peaked at number 2 R&B and number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. Powell released 4 albums and was the older brother of fellow contemporary R&B singers Trina and Tamara. Powell was credited with a 4-octave vocal range, and he was a Grammy nominee. Powell died from cardiac arrest in his Los Angeles home on September 13, 2022, one day after his 51st birthday. Also on Tuesday, we lost French-Swiss film director, screenwriter, and film critic Jean-Luc Godard. Born on December 3, 1930 in Paris, France, he rose to prominence as a pioneer of the 1960s French New Wave film movement and was arguably the most influential French filmmaker of the post-war era. According to AllMovie, his work revolutionized the motion picture form through its experimentation with narrative, continuity, sound, and camera work. During his early career as a film critic, Godard criticized mainstream French cinema's tradition of quality, which emphasized established convention over innovation and experimentation. In response, he and like-minded critics began to make their own films, challenging the conventions of traditional Hollywood in addition to French cinema. Godard first received global acclaim for his 1960 feature Breathless, helping to establish the New Wave movement. After the New Wave, his politics were less radical, and his later films are about human conflict and artistic representation from a humanist rather than Marxist perspective. In a 2002 Sight & Sound poll, Godard ranked 3rd in the critics' top 10 directors of all time. He is said to have generated one of the largest bodies of critical analysis of any filmmaker since the mid-20th century. In 2010, Godard was awarded an Academy Honorary Award, but did not attend the award ceremony. Godard was married twice, to actresses Anna Karina and Anne Wyszynski, both of whom starred in several of his films. At the age of 91, Godard died on September 13, 2022, at his home in Rolle, Switzerland. His death was reported as an assisted suicide procedure, which is legal there. On Wednesday, we lost American actor Henry Silva. Born on September 23, 1926 in Brooklyn, New York, he was a prolific character actor, and Silva was a regular staple of international genre cinema, usually playing criminals or gangsters. His notable film appearances include Ocean's 11, The Manchurian Candidate, Johnny Cool, Sharky's Machine, and Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Silva died on September 14, 2022, 9 days before his 96th birthday, at the Motion Picture and Television Fund home in Los Angeles. James Gandolfini was an American actor. Born James Joseph Gandolfini Jr. on September 18, 1961 in Westwood, New Jersey, he was best known for his role as Tony Soprano, the Italian-American mafia crime boss in HBO's television series The Sopranos, for which he won 3 Emmy Awards, 5 Screen Actor Guild Awards, and 1 Golden Globe Award. Gandolfini's portrayal of Tony Soprano has been described as one of the greatest and most influential performances in television history. Gandolfini's notable film roles include mob henchman Virgil in True Romance, Lieutenant Bobby Darty in Crimson Tide, Colonel Winter in The Last Castle, and Mayor of New York in The Taking of Pelham 123. Other roles are enforcer and stuntman Bear in Get Shorty and impulsive wild thing Carol in Where the Wild Things Are. For his performance as Albert in Enough Said, Gandolfini posthumously received much critical praise and several awards, including a Screen Actors Guild Award nomination and the Boston Society of Film Critics Award for Best Supporting Actor. In 2007, Gandolfini produced Alive Day Memories, Home from Iraq, a documentary in which he interviewed injured Iraq war veterans, and in 2010, War Torn, 1861-2010, examining the impact of post-traumatic stress disorder on soldiers and families throughout several wars in U.S. history from 1861-2010. In addition to Alive Day Memories, he also produced the television film Hemingway and Gellhorn, which gained him a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Limited Series nomination. In 2013, Gandolfini died of a heart attack in Rome at the age of 51. Dennis Johnson was an American professional basketball player. Born Dennis Wayne Johnson on September 18, 1954 in Los Angeles, California, he played for the Seattle Supersonics, Phoenix Suns, and Boston Celtics. He was a coach of the Los Angeles Clippers and an alumnus of Dominguez High School, Los Angeles Harbor College, and Pepperdine University. A prototypical late bloomer, Johnson overcame early struggles and had a successful NBA playing career. Drafted 29th overall in 1976 by the Seattle Supersonics, Johnson began his professional career as a shooting guard. He eventually led the Sonics to their only NBA championship in 1979, winning the Finals MVP award. After three seasons with the Phoenix Suns, he became the starting point guard for the Boston Celtics, with whom he won two more championships. Johnson was voted into five All-Star teams, one All-NBA first and one second team, and nine consecutive All-Defensive first and second teams. Apart from his reputation as a defensive stopper, Johnson was known as a clutch player who made several decisive plays in NBA playoffs history. The Celtics retired Johnson's number 3 jersey, which hangs from the rafters at the TD Garden, the home arena of the team. The Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame officially inducted Johnson to the Hall posthumously in 2010. He is considered by several sports journalists to be one of the most underrated players of all time. On February 22, 2007, at the Austin Convention Center, Johnson had a heart attack and collapsed at the end of the Austin Toros practice. After being rushed to a nearby hospital, he could not be revived and was later pronounced dead. Johnson was survived by his wife and his children. Johnson's death was met with shock throughout the NBA. Among others, contemporary Celtics colleague Danny Ainge called him one of the most underrated players of all time and one of the greatest Celtics acquisitions. And one-time rival Bill Laimbeer called him a great player on a great ball club. He was 52. Dee Dee Ramone was an American musician. Born Douglas Glenn Colvin on September 18, 1951 in Fort Lee, Virginia, he's best known for being a founding member and bassist of the punk rock band Ramones. Throughout the band's existence, he was the band's most prolific lyricist and composer, writing many of their best-known songs, such as 53rd and 3rd, Chinese Rock, Commando, Warthog, Rockaway Beach, Poison Heart, and Bonzo Goes the Bitburg. The latter won the New York Music Award for Best Independent Single of the Year in 1986, while Animal Boy, which the song is from, won for Best Album. Dee Dee was the band's lead vocalist until original drummer Joey Ramone took over lead vocalist duties. He was then the band's bassist and songwriter from 1974 until 1989, when he left to pursue a short-lived career in hip-hop music under the name Dee Dee King. He soon returned to his punk roots and released three solo albums featuring brand new songs, many of which were later recorded by the Ramones. He toured the world playing his new songs, Ramones songs, and some old favorites in small clubs, and continued to write songs for the Ramones until 1996, when the band retired. Dee Dee was addicted to drugs, particularly heroin, for much of his life. He began using drugs as a teenager and continued to use for the majority of his adult life. He died from a heroin overdose on June 5, 2002, at the age of 50. Fred Willard was an American actor, comedian, and writer. Born Frederick Charles Willard on September 18, 1933 in Cleveland, Ohio, he was best known for his roles in the Rob Reiner mockumentary film, This is Spinal Tap, the Christopher Guest mockumentaries, Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, For Your Consideration, and Mascots, and the Anchorman films, as well as for his television roles on Fernwood Tonight, Everybody Loves Raymond, and Modern Family, the latter of which earned him 2 Primetime Emmy Award nominations. Willard died at his home in Los Angeles on May 15, 2020, at age 86, according to his daughter and representative. The cause of death was subsequently reported as cardiac arrest, with coronary artery disease as a contributing factor. Jamie Lee Curtis, whose husband, Christopher Guest, frequently worked with Willard, first shared news of the actor's death. Rest easy, y'all. On this day in 1993, Rocko's Modern Life debuted. Rocko's Modern Life is an American animated television series created by Joe Murray for Nickelodeon. The series centers on the surreal life of an anthropomorphic Australian immigrant wallaby named Rocko and his friends, the eccentric steer Heifer Wolf, the neurotic turtle Filbert, and Rocko's faithful dog Spunky. It is set in the fictional town of O-Town. Throughout its run to present day, this show is controversial for its adult humor, including double entendre, innuendo, and satirical social commentary, similar to the Ren and Stimpy show. The series has gained a cult following. Murray created the title character for an unpublished comic book series in the late 1980s, and later reluctantly pitched the series to Nickelodeon, which was looking for edgier cartoonists for its then-new Nicktoons. The network gave the staff a large amount of creative freedom, with the writers targeting both children and adults. The show premiered on September 18, 1993, and ended on November 24, 1996, totaling 4 seasons and 52 episodes. A special, Rocko's Modern Life, Static Cling, was digitally released on Netflix on August 9, 2019. The show launched the careers of voice actors Carlos Alazacri and Tom Kenny. After the show's cancellation, much of the staff regrouped to work on SpongeBob SquarePants, created by Rocko's creative director, Steven Hillenburg. Rocko's Modern Life follows the life of an easily frightened immigrant wallaby named Rocko, who encounters various dilemmas and situations regarding otherwise mundane aspects of life. His friends are Heifer Wolf, a fat and enthusiastic steer, Filbert, a neurotic turtle who often feels awkward or disturbed, and his faithful dog Spunky. Living next door to Rocko is a middle-aged couple, Ed Bighead, a cynical and cantankerous toad who despises Rocko, and his compassionate and more friendly wife, Bev. All of the characters in Rocko's Modern Life are anthropomorphic animals of varying species, the vast majority of whom are mentally unstable. Murray said that he matched personalities of his characters to the various animals in the series to form a social caricature. Originally, the character appeared in an unpublished comic book titled Travis. Murray tried selling the comic book in the late 1980s between illustrating jobs and did not find success in getting it into production. Many other characters appeared in various sketchbooks. He described the early 1990s animation atmosphere as ripe for this kind of project. Murray wanted funding for his independent film My Dog Zero, so he wanted Nickelodeon to pre-buy television rights for the series. He presented a pencil test to Nickelodeon, which afterward became interested in buying and financing the show. Murray had never worked in television before. The industry was coming out of a rough period, and Murray wanted to shake things up a bit. Linda Siminski, then in charge of animation development in Nickelodeon, described the Nicktoons lineup and concept to Murray. He originally felt skepticism towards the concept of creating a Nicktoon, as he disliked television cartoons. Siminski told him that Nicktoons differed from other cartoons. He then told her that he believed that My Dog Zero would not work as a cartoon. He then researched Nickelodeon at the library and found that Nickelodeon's attitude was different than regular TV. The cable network providers were making their own rules. For example, Murray stated that he didn't write for children, which the executives were fine with. Murray was unsure at first, but was inspired by independent animation around him, such as Animation Celebration and MTV's Liquid Television, and gave the network a shot. At the time, Nickelodeon was selling itself as a network based as much around the edge as around kids' entertainment. It aimed to appeal to college students and parents as much as children. Murray developed the Rocco character after visiting a zoo in the Bay Area and coming across a wallaby that seemed to be oblivious to the chaos around him. Murray combed through his sketchbooks, developed the Rocco's modern life concept, and submitted it to Nickelodeon, believing that the concept would likely be rejected. Murray felt they would not like the pilot, and he would just collect his sum and begin funding for his next independent film. According to Murray, around 3 or 4 months later, he had forgotten about the concept and was working on My Dog Zero when Siminski informed him that Nickelodeon wanted a pilot episode. Murray said that he was glad that he would be getting funding for My Dog Zero. On his website, he describes My Dog Zero as that film that Linda Siminski saw which led me to Rocco. Sucker for the Suck-O-Matic was originally written as the pilot. The executives decided that Heifer Wolf, one of the characters, would be a little too weird for test audiences. Murray, instead of removing Heifer from Sucker for the Suck-O-Matic, decided to write Trash-O-Madness as the pilot episode. In the original series pilot, Rocco was colored yellow. His color was changed when a toy merchandising company informed Nick they were interested in marketing toys, but did not want to market Rocco because they already had a yellow character. Murray changed Rocco's color to beige, but after the pilot aired, the company opted out of producing toys for the series, so the color change was pointless. When the series was in development, prior to the release of the first episode, the series had the title The Rocco Show. In November of 92, 2 months prior to the production of season 1 of Rocco's Modern Life, Murray's first wife committed suicide. Murray had often blamed his wife's suicide on the show being picked up. He said, "It was always an awful connection because I look at Rocco as such a positive in my life." Murray felt that he had emotional and physical unresolved issues when he moved to Los Angeles. He describes the experience as like participating in a marathon with my pants around my ankles. Murray initially believed that he would create one season, move back to the San Francisco Bay Area, and clean up the loose ends I had left hanging. Murray said that he felt surprised when Nickelodeon approved new seasons. Nickelodeon renewed the series for its second season in December of 93. After season 3, he decided to hand the project to Steven Hillenburg, who performed most of the work for season 4. Murray continued to manage the cartoon. He said that he would completely leave the production after season 4. He said also that he encouraged the network to continue production, but Nickelodeon eventually decided to cancel the series. He described all 52 episodes as top-notch, and in his view, the quality of a television show may decline as production continues when you are dealing with volume. On his website, he said that in some ways it succeeded and in some ways failed. All I know, it developed its own flavor and an equally original legion of fans. In a 1997 interview, Murray said that he at times wondered if he could restart the series. He feels the task would be difficult. The show was jointly produced between Games Animation and Joe Murray Productions. Since Nickelodeon did not have an animation studio, it had to contract down to other studios. After incidents with the Ren and Stimpy show creator, John Kay, Nickelodeon began not to trust its creators as much and began to form its own studio, Games Animation. However, Murray recalls that they were still able to get a lot done independently. Murray has likened the independence to that of Termite Terrace from the Warner Brothers days, from the 1930s. As Nickelodeon began to have more and more success with animation cartoons, Murray said the Termite Terrace mentality was not working as much. Producer Mary Harrington made the move from New York City to Los Angeles to set up Games Animation in order to produce Rocco's Modern Life. The crew first began production on the show on January of 93. Rocco's Modern Life was Nickelodeon's first in-house animated production. Rick Bentley of the Ventura County Star said that it was unusual for a cartoon creator to select a wallaby as a main character. Bentley also stated that the Rocco universe was influenced by everything from Looney Tunes to underground comics. The staff of the show consists of fans of outrageous comedy, both animated and not animated. Tom Kenny cited Looney Tunes and SCTV as influences for the show, and also stated, "I'm sure if you ask Joe Murray or Mr. Lawrence or any of those guys, especially in terms of animation, the weirdest cartoons would, of course, be our favorites. Those weird 30s Fleischer Brothers Betty Boop cartoons and stuff like that." The writers aim to create stories that they describe as strong and funny. The writers, including George Maestri and Martin Olson, often presented ideas to Murray while eating hamburgers at Rocky's, a restaurant formerly located in the North Hollywood section of the San Fernando Valley. He took his team members on writing trips to places such as Rocky's, the La Brea Tar Pits, and the Wilderness. If he liked the story premises, the writers produced full outlines from the premises. Outlines approved by both him and Nickelodeon became Rocko's Modern Life episodes. Maestri described some stories as originating from real life, and some originating from thin air. Murray stated that each episode of Rocko's Modern Life stemmed from personal experiences of himself and or one or more of the directors or writers. He said that he did not intend to use formulaic writing seen in other cartoons. He desired content that broke new ground and did things that rode the edge and that could be described as unexpected. He did not hire writers who had previous experience with writing cartoons, instead hiring writers who worked outside of animation, including improv actors and comic artists. He said that the story concept that ever smacked close to some formula idea that we had all seen before received the immediate rejection. Jeff Marsh, a storyboard writer who went on to create Phineas and Ferb, says that writers of Rocko's Modern Life targeted children and adults. He cited Rocky and Bullwinkle as an example of another series that contains references indecipherable by children and understood by adults. Aiming for a similar goal, Marsh described the process as a hard job. According to him, when censors questioned proposed material, sometimes the team disagreed with the opinions of the censors, and sometimes the team agreed with the rationale of the censors. He says that many people told him that the team succeeded in this endeavor, and that many parents I know really enjoyed watching the show with their kids for just this reason. Jen Pacenti said the series seems very much aimed at adults for a children's cartoon. Marsh believes that material written by Doug Lawrence stands as an example of a unique sense of humor. For instance, Marsh credits Lawrence with the pineapple references, adding that Lawrence believed that pineapples seem humorous. The staff drew upon Looney Tunes and Fleischer cartoons to appeal to a wide demographic, having a certain adult sensibility, but also enjoyed by kids. Rocko's Modern Life has been noted for its racy humor. Adults made up more than one-fifth of the audience for the show during its run. The series contained numerous adult innuendos, such as Rocko's brief stint as a telephone operator at what is implied to be a sex hotline in the season 1 episode Canned. The instructions on the wall behind him helpfully remind all employees to be hot, be naughty, and be courteous, while he flatly repeats "Oh baby" into the receiver, who turned out to be Mrs. Bighead. Joe Murray noted that the season 1 episode Leapfrogs received some complaints from some parents due to its sexual humor, leading Nickelodeon removing the episode from air for the remainder of the show's run, although it later aired on the cable channel Nicktoons and was made available on DVD and video streaming sites such as Netflix and Paramount Plus. In a deleted scene from the season 1 episode The Good, the Bad, and the Wallaby, Heifer encounters a milking machine and finds pleasure, although only his reactions are shown on screen. According to writer-director Jeff Marsh, the scene was originally supposed to have hearts appearing in Heifer's eyes at the climactic moment. Although it clearly wasn't going to be included, they described the scene to the Nickelodeon censors anyway. "We described the scene and then waited for the axe to fall, but all they said was, 'Can you change the hearts to stars?' We said sure, and it went in." The scene, as well as another scene with Heifer saying goodbye to the milking machine, were later removed. There were at least two occurrences of immediate censorship of the series. The original broadcast of the season 2 episode Road Rash featured a scene in which Rocko and Heifer stop at what is suggested to be a love hotel, the No-Tell Motel, advertising hourly rates, and ask the horse desk clerk for a room, who infers the two will be engaging in intercourse. The first airing of the season 2 episode, Hut Sut Raw, included a scene in which Rocko was picking berries. Upon picking one lower on the bush, a bear rushes out whimpering and grasping his crotch. Initial reviews of Rocko's Modern Life were positive. The Miami Herald ran an article about series that were raising the standards for children's programming, singling out Rocko's Modern Life as definitely worth a look. Jennifer Mangan of the Chicago Tribune likened the series to The Simpsons, noting the show as another example of adult animation that is not for kids. Newsday highlighted the show's twisted sight gags. and the Boston Phoenix stated in the Eye Pleasers article that they enjoyed Rocco's Modern Life because of jovial excitement, good-hearted outrage, humanity, and pushy animated characterizations. However, not all reviews were positive. Ken Tucker of Entertainment Weekly described the series as a witless ripoff of Ren and Stimpy, mucus jokes without the redeeming surrealism or contempt for authority. Charles Solomon of the Los Angeles Times called the series rock bottom and a tasteless attempt to capture the Ren and Stimpy audience, mostly expressing displeasure at the crass humor. The show has seen renewed acclaim. Bronna Siegelberg of Slate said that the aspect that was almost compelling was that the show had a really poignant critique of the materialist demands of American life. She added that she realized that Rocco was really a show about how to navigate the adult world, one that could be appreciated by kids for its slapstick humor and absurdity, but had even more to say to young adults, like me. IGN called the show a prime example of the sophisticated, intelligent brand of children's programming during Nickelodeon's golden age. The AV Club also called the show one of the best series from that era, praising the show's impressive commitment to expressive character acting, well-drawn sight gags, and cartoony jokes that play with the form's slapstick strengths. New York compared the series' humor in retrospect to that of Office Space and praised the subversive anti-corporate stories. The fourth Nicktoon to debut, Rocco's boasts a sizable cult fan base to this day. Tom Kenny cited Rocco's Modern Life as vital in him learning how to do voiceovers for animation. He recalled that seeing Charlie Adler have a two-way conversation with himself as the Big Heads without any edits was dazzling. Kenny described the show's impact in an interview saying, "Rocco's Modern Life was just one of those shows that were the first to break for a lot of people who went on to do other stuff in the business." Happy anniversary, Rocco's Modern Life. Today's birthdays for September 18th. Turning 33 is Congolese Spanish basketball player Serge Ibaka. Turning 38 is British hip-hop musician Dizzy Rascal. Brazilian footballer Ronaldo turns 46 today. American actor and comedian Jason Sudeikis turns 47. Happy 48th birthday to American rapper, actor, and television host Xzibit. Turning 49 today is American actor James Marsden. American actress and toxic wife Jada Pinkett Smith turns 51 today. Turning 52 is American actress, television host, and author Aisha Tyler. Turning 53 from the infamous Wu-Tang Clan, American rapper Capadonna. Turning 54 today is Croatian basketball player, NBA champ, and Hall of Famer Toni Kukoc. American actress and singer Holly Robinson Peete turns 58 today. American baseball player, coach, and manager Ryan Sandberg turned 63. American basketball player and coach Rick Pitino turned 70 today. American neurosurgeon, author, and politician Ben Carson is 71. And both turning 89 today are Canadian ice hockey player and coach Scotty Bowman, as well as American actor, producer, and screenwriter Robert Blake. So that wraps up another edition of Over the Culture Podcast. As always, check out my other show, Happened in the 90s, every Thursday, with my buddy Matt G, Crushgasm with Kendra every Wednesday, B3F Podcast with Joey and Steve, and Don't Worry, Be Movie with Amanda and Wade. Y'all be cool now. Happy birthday to me. Peace.